the comparison theory of these semigroups as an excuse to talk about boundary weights and how they can be used to answer questions about these zero semigroups when we have a theory developed enough. I will start by recalling a problem that Bob Powers mentioned in the previous talk, and that is the following. So if you have alpha and beta are two endomorphism semigroups, not necessarily unital, that is, acting on B of H and B of K, you call them co-cycle conjugate if there is a unitary and a strongly continuous family of operators UT with the following three properties. UT is an alpha co-cycle, which means it satisfies property one. W conjugates a co-cycle perturbation of alpha to beta. And the last condition, UT star UT is equal to alpha T of 1. So that's co-cyclic conjugacy. As was mentioned before, in the case where alpha and beta are unital, that is, they are E0 semigroups, that's the standard notion that we had before. And the second important fact is that every endomorphism semigroup is co-cyclic conjugate to an E0 semigroup, so you don't introduce more classes by looking at this more general equivalence. We have some sort of an order is in quotes, so we say that beta is smaller than alpha, or if you want, you can say that alpha is a co-cycle extension of beta, if 1 and 2 are satisfied, and 3 not necessarily. And it turns out that this is the same as saying that beta is co-cycle conjugate to a subordinate of alpha, an actual subordinate of alpha. This is an endomorphism semigroup that acts on the same B of H as alpha, and has the property that alpha t minus gamma t is completely positive. So the question that was mentioned was if alpha is a co-cycle extension of beta and beta a co-cycle extension of alpha, is it true that alpha and beta are co-cycle conjugate? And I guess Bill Arbison has been blamed for a lack of answer to this. I don't know why. But I want to give a couple of restatements of this problem. First of all, using co-cyclic conjugacies, you can restate this in the following form. First of all, you can assume that alpha is an E0 semigroup, actually. Beta is an actual subordinate of alpha. Gamma is a subordinate of beta. And alpha is co-cyclic conjugate to gamma. And the question is whether alpha is co-cyclic conjugate to beta. That's a restatement. And I want to give yet another restatement with a slight simplification. You see, if you have a situation as above, beta being a subordinate corresponds to a projective local cocycle, so a family ET of projections that is an alpha cocycle. Local again means that ET commutes with the image of alpha T. Similarly, gamma T is given by a projective local cocycle FT. The fact that gamma is a subordinate of beta means that FT is a subprojection of ET. And finally, you have an isometric local alpha cocycle with final space f of t. There it goes. So this ut is the cocycle that implements the cocycle conjugacy between alpha and gamma. The question is whether alpha and beta are cocycle conjugates, which means can you construct an isometric local alpha cocycle with final space et. That is the question. So, you see, the original question is a question about local co-cycles. And as was mentioned before, we lack a proof of that. And I assume if this is true, there should be a general proof that holds for all types of E0 semigroups, including type 3. But the problem here is that if you try to do the obvious thing, that is, try to imitate the comparison theory of projections, at some point you have to do addition. And when you do addition of co-cycles, you lose the co-cycle property. That is a main problem that you have when you try to prove something like that. So what I want to do is use this as an excuse to talk about the boundary weight approach to spatial E0 semigroups and how this approach can actually give answers to a question like this. So at this point, I'm going to overlap quite a bit with things that have been said before, but I'll do it in a more colorful way. And at any time, you will see at least five colors in this. And I need some more notation that has been introduced before. So the basic theory of boundary weights is contained in those two papers that have been mentioned before. And the idea is the following thing. step one is, instead of considering E0 semigroups, you consider CP flow as a more fundamental object. K is the Hilbert space, T sub T is the shift on the K value L2 functions on 0 infinity. That space will be called H. A CP flow over K is simply a continuous semigroup of completely positive maps that intertwines the shift. That's what the CP flow is. Okay. I'm not going to use that. The relation of CP flows to E0 semigroups is through Bach theorem, a special case of which I'm mentioning here. So Bach theorem says that a CP flow will dilate to a spatial E0 semigroup. That's what it basically says. The specifics are there, and at some point maybe memorizing a little bit this notation might be useful. So you had the CP flow acting on this space H. The dilation means that H can be embedded in a larger Hilbert space H1. There is an E0 semigroup acting on B of H1, which, you know, compressed to H gives you back the CP flow that you started with. And the remark that I have below is important for notational reasons. One can make a model of the dilation so that the Hilbert space H1 can be written as K1 tensor L2. There is an embedding of K into K1, K being the fundamental Hilbert space over here. And so that the original shift that we started with dilates to the shift in the big Hilbert space. So you can arrange so that the dilation works like that. So from now on, this notation will be fixed. Alpha will be a CP flow. Alpha D, superscript D, will be its dilation. And T superscript D will be the dilation of the shift that you started with. I did not mention that this dilation is unique up to conjugacy, subject to some minimality, natural minimality condition, and we always assume that. We always assume that we have the minimality. That is the first step. Instead of studying E0 semigroups, spatial E0 semigroups, we study CP flows, because every spatial E0 semigroup comes from a CP flow. The second and most difficult step is to associate with every CP flow an even more fundamental object, and that is the boundary weight. And I will explain in some detail, though it's not very illuminating, no matter how you do it, but at least the nature of the object might become a little bit clear. First of all, you are studying a CP flow, a semigroup if you want. It is natural that the resolvents are important. So alpha is the CP flow, R will be the resolvent of alpha, gamma will be the resolvent of the shift, of the semigroup generated by the shift. And another operator that is important is this operator lambda, which goes from B of K to B of H. And lambda of A is basically the operator that is multiplication by A followed by multiplication by e to the minus x. Some notation, and the first is abusive. Occasionally, we will also denote by lambda of 1, which is simply multiplication by e to the minus x. And I'll only need that probably. When I have a state or a functional or a weight or whatever, and I write omega sub t, I mean the cutoff by the projection of all functions with support in t infinity. So that's what the subscript t would mean for any weight or functional. What's a boundary weight in general? It is a weight, so it's not everywhere defined. It is defined in this subalgebra of B of H. You have the operator 1 minus lambda to the 1 half on both sides. And this weight is in some sense, well, I shouldn't say it's normal, but it is associated with a normal linear functional. So there is an actual, honest linear functional, normal, so that omega and that functional are related this way. So every boundary weight is associated with a normal linear functional. And the fundamental theorem, that's a very difficult business over here, which I have reduced to a few lines, but that's Bock-Powers' theorem, that every CP flow alpha comes from a boundary weight map. It's not just one boundary weight, but it's a map from the pre-dual of B of K to boundary weight of B of H that satisfies some positivity condition. The positivity field condition was mentioned by Bob before. This is it. It's not standard positivity of a functional, but it is this strange thing that has this, the inverse of this operator over here. And I just write this down because it's the quickest way to write down to show that this omega has a very complicated relationship to the original flow alpha that involves the resolvents of alpha, the semigroup generated by conjugation by the shift, and lambda. Hat always means the pre-dual action of those operators. So the point is, Bob has done all the work, or much of the work, and now every time you can write something like that, and you can write examples of these things easily, knowing them all is a different story, but writing down examples is quite easy. And automatically, once you write this down, you have an E0 semigroup through the process of going to the Sifty flow and then through Batch theorem to the minimal dilation. And the whole idea, the whole philosophy is to start answering questions about the E0 semigroup at the level of the boundary weight. Now, this is already quite complicated. I want to restrict myself to the case where the original cyberspace K is one-dimensional. In that case, there is no boundary weight map, really. There is only one weight because K is one-dimensional. So all you have to write down is a boundary weight. The positivity condition becomes this regular positivity condition, which means that omega is positive. That's all it means. And because omega is, as I said, related to a normal functional in the way that I wrote before, it can be written in this form. This only means that you can write down as many of those things as you want. I mean, it's a very simple thing to write down things like that, and each one of those will correspond to an E0 semigroup through the two steps that I mentioned before. This has been also mentioned today. If omega is unbounded, then the E0 semigroup that you'll get is type 2-0. If it is bounded, then it will be type 1-n, where n is the rank of omega. So there you have it. The challenge is to, as I said, to answer questions about the E0 semigroup at the level of the boundary weight from which it comes. And going back to my original motivation, if you want, for this talk, I would like to know as much as I can about cocycles, or local cocycles, for an E0 semigroup that comes from a boundary weight like that. And this is what what we did with Jeff Price and Bob Powers. So what at the level of the boundary weight, how do you understand local cocycles? It turns out that the relevant notion is that of the Q-corner. So omega is a boundary weight, like the ones that I wrote down before. A Q-corner from omega to omega is just a map that, when you form this 2x2 matrix, that's a Q-positive weight itself. Which means what? It means it generates a Sifty flow on B of H plus H. It's a two-dimensional now boundary weight. The positivity condition, the Q positivity, means this is regular positivity of a matrix of 2x2, a 2x2 matrix of weights. Now, how do objects like this relate to cocycle? I can give some description. So, again, omega is the boundary weight, alpha the associated Sifty flow, alpha d the minimal dilation. Q-corners, like, defined over here, correspond, are a one-to-one and non-to correspondence with contractive local cocycles that fix the shift, the dilated shift. Before I go on, I will explain a little bit the correspondence. I should say this is not a major restriction here. If omega was bounded, then the E0 semigroup that you get is a type 1 E0 semigroup, and all cocycles are known. Bill computed the unitary local cocycles first. Bach has computed the other ones. So that's not the case that interests us. In the case where omega is unbounded, you get a type 2-0 E0 semigroup. In that case, it is not, well, it takes some work to show that if I know the local cocycles that fix the shift, then the other ones are just scalar multiples of those by some exponential. So I'm not losing anything in this case with this restriction. Now, what's the correspondence? If you can write down a Q corner, that is a map gamma that makes this a Q positive weight, this by definition corresponds to a CP flow on B of H plus H, B of L2 plus L2. It will have this form, and then he takes effort to show that that's what Bob Powers did in his original paper. Vita T corresponds to a contractive local cocycle according to this formula. Going this way is very easy. If you put in for Vita T this, it is easy to show that this is CP flow. The difficult part is going this way. But that's it. I mean, we have at least some description of what the local cocycles look like at the level of the boundary weight, and all we have to do is compute what those gammas are. That's the thing. And of course, we know what defines a gamma. It's this positivity condition. So we did that with Jeff Price and Bob Powers, and I'll explain only part of this slide. We got a complete description of what the Q corners look like. So I just want to concentrate on this formula. So a Q corner corresponds to a pair consisting of an operator and a complex number. The operator X, okay, I have to explain what the capital omega is. If you give me a boundary weight, it is related to a normal functional, as I said before, and that normal functional, which is positive in this case, will have a density operator. That density operator I call capital omega. And the description that we found using simply, you know, we just explored what this positivity condition means. The description that we found was that every Q corner from omega to omega is of this form. So there is an operator capital X that goes from the closed range of omega to the closed range of omega, and the complex number little x. And the positivity condition imposes this condition on capital X and this condition on the complex number little x. So there is a boundedness condition. I will call this the kappa constant. And the complex number x simply has to have real part bigger than that that kappa of x. So every Q corner corresponds to a pair of consisting of an operator and a complex number. Let me put that over here. And then such pairs describe all Q corners, and therefore they describe all contractive local cocycles. So this slide is just a restatement of things and the introduction of some notation. So omega is an unbounded boundary weight, alpha the CP flow corresponding to it, alpha d the minimal dilation. Then by this, C sub x comma x, I will mean the local cocycle corresponding to a pair consisting of the operator x from range of omega to range of omega, and the complex number little x with the property that the kappa constant is finite and real part of x is bigger than kappa of x. So that's a description which is something, but it's not, you know, it's just a parameterization of the cocycles, really. In a sense, for a particular boundary weight, maybe you can compute them. But what's most impressive about this this boundary weight technology is that it allows us not only to compute, to find the parameterization of the cocycles, but to understand completely the structure. The structure of local cocycles was mentioned already. They have an order structure, they have a multiplicative structure, and we were able actually at the level of the boundary weight, that is in terms of those operators, to completely describe what's going on. And here are a few of those things. We know when a local cocycle is going to be positive in terms of the pair associated with it. It has to correspond to a positive operator. We know when a cocycle is bigger than another one. It's those two inequalities that have to be satisfied. We have a characterization of isometric and unitary cocycles. In particular, you know, we know the gauge group, the group of automorphisms of the product system, if you want. And perhaps most importantly, and that was, well, all of this was fairly difficult, but this was by far the most difficult thing. We have a description of multiplication. That is, we know how, when you multiply two cocycles, what is the pair that corresponds to the product. And to me, this is a completely satisfactory answer as to what the cocycles look like in the case of an E0 semigroup arising from from a boundary weight, an unbounded boundary weight, over a one-dimensional space. I should mention that. Now, why is this useful? I'll show you exactly how it relates to the original problem, and I will probably finish with that. Now, I had stated the problem in terms of cocycles. Now, I'm going to look at the case where alpha is a type 2-0-0 semigroup obtained from a one-dimensional boundary weight. And here, these are the conditions that I had before. So, theta t corresponding to a projective local cocycle, which by the computation that we just made corresponds to a projection from the closed range of omega to itself with a bounded kappa constant. Similarly, f of t, the projective local cocycle corresponding to gamma, gives rise to a projection with a bounded kappa constant. The fact that the cocycle f t was smaller than e t means that f is smaller than e. And the fact that there was an isometric local alpha cocycle with finite space f t means that there is a co-isometry, really, but I just don't want to deal with the stars. The actual operator corresponding to an isometry is a co-isometry, but I'm using its star here, basically. But there is an isometry going from closed range of omega to closed range of omega with a finite kappa constant, and because of the way multiplication works, it will have finite space F. The question that was asked is, can you find a local cocycle WT with finite space ET? That translates to, can you find an isometry from the closed range of omega to itself with finite range E and also a finite kappa constant? That's the issue. But you see, the problem on the right is a regular phonemic algebra problem. I mean, it's just a comparison theory of projections problem with the extra condition that we need to make sure that whatever we get has a finite kappa constant. But it turns out that if you just copy the proof, the von Neumann proof of the Cantor-Bernstein analog of von Neumann, and I have it over here, but you just do the construction, you construct the W as usual, it is easy to solve those two, and with a little effort, and miraculously, or predictably, depending on your optimism going into this, the kappa constant is finite. So just copying the proof, the regular proof, you got an operator W that has a finite kappa constant and therefore gives rise to a local cocycle that has the properties that you wanted. So the point is that through this this technology of the boundary weight, one is able not only to compute, it's not just computational, but this is a proof about the theorem about these zero semigroups that is done completely at the level of the boundary weight, which is far removed from the actual semigroup. The issue here is that we only have a satisfactory theory for one-dimensional boundary weights, and it would be a great thing if somebody could come up with something for two or higher dimensions, because this technology does not exist for higher dimensions. And I'll stop here. Thanks. Yes, it's exactly this correspondence of the cocycle to an operator allows you to do addition, basically, of cocycles at that level, and then automatically you have, as long as that constant remains bounded, it's a strange thing. It's like having a log, something about cocycles. This is a general problem in cocycles. You probably have encountered that you cannot add them in any way. I mean, every time you try to do some construction, unless it's multiplicative, it's...
here somehow some sort of multiplicative version of Cantor Bernstein on the product system.
Hmm.
But that's right, you do.
I tried. I mean, when you said this, I tried what you said, but you see, you work in each fiber space separately, and then you have to put things together, and that's the difficulty. On the other hand, the original question may have a product system proof that is easy. I mean, without trying to do the Cantor-Bernstein, maybe I think product systems are the natural place to do something like this in general, for type 3, for example. But we don't. Other than this Cantor-Bernstein thing, we don't have another way of doing things.
I think